This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM, webcast at kcrw.com, and distributed by NPR.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Borders, presenting books, music, and movie gift ideas from The Gift Squad. Details at bordersgifts.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, we revisit our conversation with two successful screenwriters about the art of creative collaboration. Plus, Hollywood's ready for its close-up. Or is it? Don't go anywhere. It's The Business from NPR. The writers of Casablanca, brothers Julius and Philip Epstein, were an inseparable team on contract to Warner Brothers for 20 years. Legend has it that when studio chief Jack Warner saw even just one of them on the studio lot, he'd automatically say, "Hi, boys." In fact, Hollywood has a long tradition of close-knit writing partnerships. These days, there's Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio, who wrote Shrek and three Pirates of the Caribbean movies. There's Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor, who wrote Sideways, About Schmidt, and Election. And let's not forget the Coen brothers, the Farrelly brothers, and the Wachowski siblings. But what does it take to make a partnership work? Aside from their successful individual careers, Michael Cleary and Mike Werb, often referred to as the Mikes, have been writing together for some 15 years. Their first collaboration was John Woo's Face Off, and they're credited on Lara Croft Tomb Raider. They've been script doctors and punch-up writers on scripts from Stephen King's Pet Sematary to the Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle Collateral Damage. Michael Cleary, Mike Werb, Mikes, welcome to The Business.
Thank you so much.
Given the unique circumstances confronting us here, two Michaels, one room. Let's get the voices down. One is Michael, who sounds like this.
I'm Michael.
And one is Mike.
I'm Mike, and most people just call me Werb.
First of all, how did you guys meet?
Well, it was a story of selfishness, as is generally the case in Hollywood. I was living in North Hollywood and taking two buses to get to UCLA, where I was in film school. Michael was also there, and someone said, "Oh, this guy lives in Toluca Lake. Maybe you can hitch a ride with him." And so he started driving me, and we shared a certain sensibility for film, particularly action movies and things like that. And I think we had gone to Pasadena to see the Jimmy Cagney movie, White Heat. And we decided, hey, you know, let's write a new action movie together. And that was Face Off, the first thing we ever wrote together.
Really? So how did you decide that you wanted to work together? I mean, what was there a moment or did you have a formal conversation? Like, Mr. Cleary, did you...
Well, my recollection...
Did you get a ring? Did you get down on one knee?
Like most things, like probably also in Hollywood, it was done sort of spur of the moment without any real sense of the maybe long-term consequences, I guess. And in fact, to this day, it's been 15 years and lawyers and managers and agents still shake their head that Mike and I have never had any kind of paperwork about our partnership or anything like that. And they're always like, you should get some kind of something on paper. It's like, we've never had that. But we both had gigs. They were both sort of ending and wrapping up. We had given each other – we had worked very intensely with each other on each other's stuff, giving notes in preparation for those scripts to be turned in. And I literally just said, we should try to write something together sort of as a sideline almost or as an experiment or, you know, I don't think either one of us anticipated having a partnership. And it was a really inspiring and motivating experience and very, very rewarding creatively.
Although the first week writing together was a bit of a nightmare.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you next is, you know, describe, if you will, what it's like to finally – it's one thing to say, oh, well, you know, we get along and, you know, he gives me notes and it's nice. But, like, what's it like when you finally sit down and you're used to doing, like, who drives basically? Who's at the key? Are you both at the keyboard?
Well,
how do you work?
The problem with that first week was we were both at the keyboard. I mean, mind you, we sat down and we broke the story in the old fashioned way, which was, you know, still a great method, which is scene carding it out by hand. And that took about a week. And once we had the structure of the story locked down, we sat in my house because Michael had an apartment, and we hovered over the computer together, sort of swapping a captain's chair position. And it was very difficult. It was a week of basically hell, and Michael will tell you
we would polite each other to death about trying to compose any kind of sentence. It was like I would say, okay, he scuttles into the room.
No, he scampers.
And yeah,
no, he scurries.
He scurries.
We were each other's thesauruses in the negative manner.
So after about a week, we had written probably about half a page of well-parsed exposition. And finally, we decided that it wasn't working and that we had to try – if we were going to get the script done, we had to try some other way. So we both just split up our outline, and
Cleary went into the dining room, and I stayed in the home office. And you know, we split up the script, and then we would always be there for each.
You split it up. How did you split it up?
Well, I think I started the first act, and or the first half, and Cleary started the second half. As I said, one thing we did very carefully, even though it sounds like it wasn't careful because it only took us 5 days, but it was a very, very locked down, tight structure. And once we had that structure down and we're in the same room, if we have any problems with characters or we're thinking of deviating, which we often did, we'd work it out with the other person and then keep writing, because we could – you know, it's a lot less intimidating to have to do, which is one of the great things about a partnership, to do 60 pages instead of 120, and to have someone there that you trust both creatively and emotionally as a sounding board. And we did. And then what we would do is we swapped pages, and then once we had what we call a dirty draft, which is our first draft, we'd hover over the computer, we'd take turns at the station, and make it sing with one voice.
It has been a source of kind of amazement for me to sort of, when we've come to swap pages, sort of working in a vacuum really with just the outline, how sometimes very seamlessly they all – sort of the pieces fit together. Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty gratifying in that regard.
Well, sometimes the tension rises when we're about to submit a script and Cleary can tell
that's
about me being his living nightmare.
That's very true.
When he's just ready to go home.
Many times, and this is the time in the era before email, in that time of dinosaurs, when you actually had to print your script out and proofread it and send it over to the studio at 7:30 on a Friday night. And many, many days when we've had a deadline like that, at about 5:30 in the afternoon, when I can't have my car keys are in my hand and the script is the printer's pumping out the last few pages, Mike said, "You know, on page 22, I really think we should get into that scene a little more differently there." And
Or a whole new ending
or any number of changes. And that just my blood pressure is going up just thinking about it.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Mike Werb and Michael Cleary, one of the most successful screenwriting partnerships of the last 10, 15 years. Their movies have included Face Off, The Mask, Curious George, and Lara Croft Tomb Raider. We're talking about what it's like to be partners in Hollywood. I want to ask you, working together as fraught as it can be, it's been a very successful partnership. What is it like being an entity? That is, you know, you are in Hollywood as the Mikes.
Ovitz and Eisner broke up, we're the last
only remaining
Mike standing.
Mikes.
Yes.
How does it – describe it to me. I mean, how is it to be a business of two writers?
The good thing about it is, and it's mostly almost all good, the good thing about it is when you're in the room getting notes from the studio, the predatory pack development mentality, you can defend yourself against that in a better way. If some note comes down that is so phenomenally idiotic, it literally numbs my brain and I cannot come up with a much needed response to not make that happen or not have the entire project crumble. If I'm at a loss for words, Michael immediately – it's like being identical twins or something. He immediately senses that. He'll jump in and spew out something about Joseph Campbell, and he'll confuse them to the point where they have to start talking about that, and then I'll be able to come up with a defense while he's putting up these barriers.
He can sort of protect you from catatonia and –
Those meetings, I think vice versa as well.
Those meetings certainly are set up to, I believe, swarm the writer typically. And there's a lot of people in the room who don't always need to be there. And it's just really to, I think, enforce the studio's will on the writer and, frankly, intimidate them sometimes. So when there's two of you sort of looking back, you can watch, as Mike says, you can watch each other's back in terms of defending the script and defending sort of what your idea is.
Who does what in a pitch?
We don't really have a set process. We've both gone in and sort of taken the lead in a pitch. We have both let the other person carry the ball in a pitch at times. We both sold stuff in pitches together and separately. So we try to be very well prepared if we can be. And we, of course, have our own attitude about what makes a good pitch, which is to say little up front and be prepared to answer a lot of questions if you can. The less said, the better, typically. But again, the same process applies where if one of us is sort of drifting away, the other is there to kind of put the thing back on track.
We definitely make sure we haven't always, but for the most part, we're very prepared, and we do decide who takes the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as free form, I think, as we sometimes feel it is, but we definitely decide who's going to start. And when there are certain areas where we're maybe less confident, I'll certainly say things like, if it looks like I'm making no sense here or I'm losing them, jump in. And he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I do too. So,
can you give me an example of, you know?
Well, the project was at Warner Brothers. It ended up at Paramount. It's such a Warner Brothers movie. It was surprising to us that the option.
You're referring to Face Off now.
I'm talking about Face Off, yeah. And it was at Warner's, and we were having a huge fight with the studio over creative issues, of course. And that issue was, did you see the movie?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a scene where John Travolta, who's now the bad guy, but he looks like the good guy, is at home with his wife, Joan Allen, and he carries her upstairs and has sex with her, which, of course, is the darkest moment in the movie because even though she believes it's her husband, she's being raped. And the studio was extremely uncomfortable with that scene. And we had an enormous creative differences and several meetings about it. And they kept saying, well, she'll know that it's not her husband. And we kept saying, it's the same actor. Well, she can smell the difference, they said. To which we responded, well, it's not a John Waters movie. Unless you're hiring him to direct, there's no smell-o-vision in this film. All right, we'll put the sex scene in the shower with some Irish spring soap, and then she won't be able to smell that it's not her husband.
That's a turn-on.
So what happened was it escalated, and it got very heated in the room. And I said, well, there are five or six Shakespearean plays where someone slips into bed under the cover of darkness with someone else, and hijinks ensue. And then the executive looked at me and said with great
condescension.
Yeah, that's the right word. He does that a lot. Great condescension. Got news for you, Werb. This ain't Shakespeare. So I got up and walked
out.
Things, of course, I left him high and dry in the meeting. And so anyway, we were brought into Joel Silver's conference room at that point. I'm not to meet with Joel, but
this is a big producer of The Matrix. And
yes, and he was
movies.
At the time the producer on Face Off before Michael Douglas and Steve Ruther took it over at Paramount and David Permit. And we were waiting to have a meeting about this one topic. And while we were waiting in the conference room, Mel Gibson came in, and he was there on one of the Lethal Weapon movies, and we just, you know, he just started asking us why we were there and what our movie project was, and he was as sane as can be and phenomenally empathetic, and we told him the story. Thought it sounded like an enormous acting challenge. Fantastic. He was like totally cool about it. And we told him about the fight we were having with the studio over this one issue, and he sat there and he thought of it, and he goes, "They're crazy. I'm telling Joel that. I'm telling the studio that." And so because of that, Silver Pictures backed us up on this issue. And what ended up happening was, because we were so entrenched in this position, they decided not to make the movie. We got it back.
To jump back a little bit, Werb has just left a chair spinning and walked out of the room. So
it was a bit of an awkward moment.
Sort of swing your nipple tassels, or what do you do? Or do you say, "I'll be right back"? What happened?
I lied. They all looked at me and said, "Was that just a walkout? Was that just a did he just walk out of here?" And of course, I had no idea he was going to do that. And I said, I think he needed to use the restroom." And
that was a very long time.
He never came back. And eventually they ushered me out, and we had that encounter in the conference room with Mel Gibson. But you know, you basically sometimes you just have to sort of sit there and take it, you know, and in terms of that. I mean, I wasn't going to I just went back over the same reasons, you know, that we were arguing for. The things we were arguing for were really, really important. But, you know, sometimes those meetings are such theater in a way. I mean, you're not really going to convince anyone of anything. They've walked in with their point of view, and their job is to enforce it on you. And they're not really that interested in your arguments per se.
Although I have to say, except for that one issue, they were great. Mm-hmm. They just got scared of that moment because it was so dark.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Mike Werb and Michael Kaleri, one of the most successful screenwriting partnerships of the last 10, 15 years. Their movies have included Face Off, The Mask, Curious George, and Lara Croft Tomb Raider. We're talking about what it's like to be partners in Hollywood. This is a town sort of famous for manipulation, and I'm curious if studio chiefs or development executives, do they ever try and play you against each other? You know, do they ever say to you, "You know, Werb, Kaleri, he's just being insane. Can you go talk to him?"
I'll let the chiseler answer that question. No, you needn't go there.
I don't think they ever see – let me answer the question like this. I don't think they've ever seen an opening but with Mike and me. But I think if they did, absolutely. They absolutely would. And certainly I have had conversations in which – or I actually overheard a conversation recently with the head of a studio. One of the things we use we think to a great advantage is if we think we're going to have a difficult conversation with someone creatively or politically at a studio, one of us will call the guy. And the other person will sort of lurk about but not be technically present so that one of us can say, "Well, I have to run all this by my partner." And that gives us a chance to kind of regroup if there's something controversial.
Not commit to anything.
And not commit to anything on the phone, and so try to keep it an open-ended issue, which, of course, the other of us sometimes – not all the time – but is actually sitting right there and hearing the whole thing.
Or on mute.
So the other day, this was actually happening. I was driving, so Mike was on this car phone, so it wasn't really set up to be a duplicitous kind of thing. But I could overhear everything Mike was saying, and I heard Mike kept saying, "Well, I have to run this by Kaleri," and I heard the president say, "I don't care what Kaleri thinks. I don't give a damn. You're just going to tell him this is the way it is." And, you know, I'd always had a very cordial, friendly relationship with the guy until that moment. And I really got a heads up about what he really felt.
And my response to that was simply, "Well, I'll run that by Kaleri, too."
We'll have more with Michael Kaleri and Mike Werb, the longtime writing team known as the Mikes, after a short break. You're listening to The Business from NPR. This is The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. Michael Cleary and Mike Werb, often referred to as the Mikes, have been writing together for some 15 years. Their first collaboration was John Woo's Face Off, and they're credited on Lara Croft Tomb Raider. They've been script doctors and punch-up writers on scripts from Stephen King's Pet Sematary to the Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle Collateral Damage.
I mean, as you look back over 15 years, are there moments that you think, God, if I hadn't either had this guy with me, we'd have been dead, or if I hadn't had this guy with me, that thing it would have sold. I would be sitting on an island with.
One of the things I would say might be worth talking about is, of course, you know, we've been offered over the years, like all writers who with any kind of track record get offered open assignments or the opportunity to at least audition for these assignments. And so probably between the two of us, we've turned down
Ocean's 11.
What was the other one? The Italian Job remake. I just saw The Prisoner was getting going with Chris
Night
Nolan.
Night at the Museum.
Yeah. I mean, probably every hit movie of the last 10 years, many of them floated our way. And for one reason or the other, we both have to agree to do something. You know, it has to sort of spark both of our interests, which, of course, is not a problem an individual writer faces.
I mean, but the upside of all of this is, you know, for having passed on all these big movies, you've also never, you know, had to look back and say, well, we shouldn't have written Ishtar. That was really...
You know what? It's always good to get a movie made and have another credit.
My first credit was a co-story credit on Death Wish 5. The Face of Death. And, you know, at the time I felt a little sheepish about it, but I have to say, nothing I've worked on or written, whether it was shot or not, has ever made my father prouder of me. Because my father is like wanted to be Charles Bronson. He wanted to be the guy in the park with a sock full of quarters punching muggers. At the end of the day, you know, who really cares? It's just a movie and it's there for people to have fun with. And even if maybe we thought it could be better, there's someone out there who probably enjoyed it and thought it was great. So who are we to judge?
Mike Werb and Michael Cleary are the Mikes. Their new film, Firehouse Dog, hits theaters early next year. Mike, Michael, thanks for being on the
show. Can I add one more thing?
Of course.
We actually wrote that script with a third partner who entered the fold, somebody we also went to UCLA with, Claire D. Lim.
This
we
is
produced
your first...
it together, and we had a three-way on this movie with a girl.
And poor Claire had to sit between two bossy know-it-all screenwriters yelling in her ears, and the script turned out great. So
we're going to have Claire on next. Mike, Michael, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Claude.
Last week, For Your Consideration opened in wide release. Christopher Guest's new mockumentary features the repertory company from his previous send-ups, A Mighty Wind, Waiting for Guffman, and Best in Show. Only this time, he takes on a subject much more pitiable than aging folk singers, small-town community theater, or dog show contestants. He goes after Hollywood. In For Your Consideration, a ragtag crew of has-beens and wannabes make a wartime drama called Home for Purim, and dream of Oscar gold.
I think you're looking at an Academy Award nomination also.
Did you say what I thought he said?
What?
Yes, Victor!
Oscars. I smell Oscars.
You see what a little buzz can do in this town?
I predicted it. I said this is the one. This is the vehicle.
Morley, you told me not to do it.
But this is not the first time Guest has mined Hollywood's thick vein of pathos. In 1989, he directed and co-wrote The Big Picture, about how the dream of making it big in Hollywood can become a nightmare.
If you decide to sign with me, you're going to get more than an agent. You're going to get three people. You're going to get an agent, a mother, a father, a shoulder to cry on, someone who knows this business inside and out. And if anyone ever tries to cross you, I'll grab them by the balls and squeeze till they're dead.
The truth is, there have been movies about movies as long as there have been movies. The 1913 short Evidence of a Film is one of the earliest examples, and Charlie Chaplin, Hal Roach, and Max Sennett each made comedy shorts on the set of a studio lot a few years later. Buster Keaton's 1928 film The Cameraman appears to be the first feature-length film with filmmaking at the center of its plot. But making movies about movies is a chancy proposition. First and foremost, you run the risk of being a little too inside baseball. Even serious films end up feeling like caricatures. But with these challenges, there's still a lot of truth about the business in movies about movies. Here are a few memorable examples.
What we're looking for, Miss Strickland, is the girlfriend of the brother of the main character. She has to be tough, but sensitive. She knows life, and yet she's very naive at the same time. And of course, she has to be very, very Spanish. We're looking for a very West Side Story kind of look.
No one goes to the movies to have a bad time or to learn anything.
What is important is what they leave the theater with. And if they don't enter the theater, they don't get a chance to leave it.
I have failed. I am panicked.
Farce.
I have sold out. I am worthless.
The director said you have to meet me at my house at 12 midnight. Girl, I ain't stupid. I was there at 11:59.
Hollywood's a close-knit community. It's easy to make friends, and it's easy to make enemies, the friends you don't normally keep. But the enemies you do.
You need guidance? Talk to another writer.
Who?
Oh, Jesus. You throw a rock in here, you'll hit one. Do me a favor, Fink. Throw it hard.
You're looking at enough to get us started. $2,184.
But movies cost millions of dollars to make.
That's after gross net deduction, profit percentage deferment, 10% of the nut. Cash, every movie costs $2,184.
So what kind of food they got at this Ivy place?
It's continental, but it doesn't matter. Martin won't order from the menu anyway.
Why not?
Because movie stars can never order straight from the menu. They have to think of something they have to have that isn't on the menu.
Get me this horse.
That horse is booked.
Tell the guy. Get me this horse. Tell the guy. I'll give him an associate producer credit. I'll give the horse an associate producer credit.
I want this picture to be a commentary on modern conditions, stark realism, the problems that confront the average man.
But with a little sex.
A little, but I don't want to stress it. I want this picture to be a document. I want to hold a mirror up to life. I want this to be a picture of dignity, a true canvas of the suffering of humanity.
But with a little sex.
With a little sex in it.
I love to see myself a star.
Yeah.
Well, craftsman, like a medieval craftsman.
With a Porsche.
Plying your trade.
I'm a medieval craftsman with a Porsche.
So what's happening with Glass Box?
Can we talk about something other than Hollywood for a change?
Yeah. Yes.
We're educated people.
Sure.
There's nothing else. Just us. And the cameras. And those wonderful people out there in the dark. All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Those were clips from The Dying Gaul, Hollywood Shuffle, State and Main, Adaptation, Badass, Barton Fink, Bowfinger, Get Shorty, Tristram Shandy, A Cock and Bull Story, Sullivan's Travels, and of course, Sunset Boulevard. The montage also included a clip from The Player. This week, we said goodbye to the director of that seminal piece of Hollywood self-satire and a long list of truly great films. Robert Altman died on Tuesday at the age of 81. And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com and click on KCRW A to Z. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the completely redesigned 300-horsepower MDX. More information is available at Acura.com.